You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic.
I'm Cameron Lalana.
And I'm Matt Garasimovich.
And today we're covering part two, chapter 44 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate. Today covering the arrival of the Jewish prisoners, Sophia Leventon. Her train has finally arrived at its destination, the death camp, and we follow how the guards and the prisoner workers organize those arrivals through this chapter. Is there anywhere in particular that you'd like to begin?
Yeah, I not one spot, I guess, per se, but because there's a couple of really interesting things in this one, and it's only like a page and a half long, but this one is so... It has so many different nuances going on within it that it's a really, I don't know. I know I shouldn't be amazed having read this book multiple times and, you know, doing the chapter a day format, but I continue to find things that I am enamored with Grossman's writing and the way that he kind of, you know, it keeps you. I mean, he's writing a 900 page book and it feels like a page turner, you know, like the tension is just, it's just absolutely amped up at every section of this. And of course, as an outside reader reading from the perspective of knowing what has happened during the Holocaust, you know that when they say, oh, great, we're going to the bathhouses. Oh, wonderful, we're going to the bathhouses. You know that that is not something that is going to be good. But this sense of, I don't know, this sort of sense that, well, how do you put it? Like, you might think there's some optimism that some semblance of humanity might be restored. And that's what people are kind of clinging on to. And of course, this will inevitably be crushed, but it is, you know, very sad the way that it is set up and portrayed here. And then I think the other tragic part of this is the conversation that's kind of in these multiple languages, because there are people from, you know, like all over the Eastern Bloc here, and the man that is in charge of it's basically taking the Jews off the train and unloading them and kind of ushering them to where they're going. Through this conversation he has with an old woman, it turns out he's also Jewish. And so there's just multiple layers and complexity in this particular chapter. And it was just, I mean, this chapter, it sort of had this very... I don't know. I had this kind of this back and forth. It felt like everything was happening very quick. There was, I don't know. I felt when I was reading it, like there was just a lot of, it was very sensory, I guess, in some ways. And so you really felt to some degree, like, I don't know, that same kind of confusion and overwhelming kind of sense of confusion. It permeates the chapter, and I really like this one.
Yeah. Definitely, especially that interaction that really fascinates me too here, because I think one, and we've talked about this a good amount in the Discord, especially around responsibility in these camps, and specifically around in this case the prisoner workers, those who are helping organize it. Of course, we know for a fact that among the prisoner workers who helped the Holocaust happen, there were Jewish people among them. That's, you know, a fact of history. But just talking about the complicity of non-German forces can be pretty fraught, historically speaking, especially today when those, you know, facts can be so easily like weaponized to justify other unrelated things. Like, right, it's true that there were Soviet citizens, there were Polish citizens, there were Ukrainian citizens, or Ukrainians were citizens of the Soviet Union. There were, you know, and of course the Poles could be as well, but there were all these other nationalities that were all involved. And sometimes today you can see those weaponized to say, you know, justify other things, which is absolutely, those are not connected things. That being said, there still is individual complicity here. And I think this is something that Grossman delves into a lot too. And also in the you know, in this machinery of dehumanization, we have, you know, this person This man, presumably Jewish, he's speaking Russian, Polish, excuse me. He's speaking Russian, he speaks Polish, he speaks a little bit of Yiddish, and even speaks in German to all of them. Which one he actually speaks, unclear. I'm sure he's picked up more than a little bit of all of them, whichever ones he spoke when he came in. And we come to the very end of the chapter, and not only he, but all these prisoner workers are disappointed in this train, because everything coming in from the east, well, those cars are just full of death and rot. At least the ones coming in from the west have things, some things they can steal. And it really calls to mind the last chapter, the reminder that, I read this in the post, but he, you know, this person under fashion, this theoretical person, may be a tool in the hands of destructive powers, but he knows it is in his interest to assent to this. And it reminds me that, right, that of the difficult position in talking about such complicity historically in terms of balancing the individual drive to survive with the ways in which that, yes, people do act because they realize it's in their self-interest. And it might not just be as pure as survival. It might at some point be go beyond to, well, you know, I can get this little, these little trinkets, some little niceties in this pretty rough existence. And it's an important one, but it's a tough line. It's a very difficult thing to talk about. It's a very fraught topic, complicity with the fascist forces for the Holocaust.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of something about the book that's difficult for obvious reasons. And we talk about this a lot on the show, which is when books tend to be Slavic or Russian books tend to be popular on these hard issues. They tend to be more popular from authors who are they really take a stance, and it's easy to see where they're coming down. And they make the moral issues, quite frankly, like a little bit more simple. And I'm talking more about the 20th century, I guess, probably more than the 19th century here. But I think that Grossman is, and I don't think anybody would read this book and say, yeah, that's an easy one. I got it. I understand what he's saying. It is very difficult. And I think that's, for me, why he's so worth reading. That is, that being said, I mean, it is a stumbling block, because you're reading through the book and you're not, like, you feel like he's leading you to somewhere, and then he kind of does a 180, and it's not always clear where he stands, where you stand, where the characters stand. And I think that's, that's part of the point of reading Grossman. That's part of the experience of reading him, taking you through a 900 page novel, is it feels like some chapters it is also an exploration for him as the author. And there are some chapters where clearly he has his mind made up and he is doing his Grossman Tolstoyan kind of prose, right? But there are other chapters where he really is probing, the limits of his form, so to speak, and really kind of questioning deeper. And it's amazing that he can do that and generate such discussion and discourse in just these, like every single chapter we've had ample things to talk about. It's really incredible.
It is, and we have not even gotten to the most discoursey parts of the novel yet.
Mm-hmm.
You might think we've already reached the apotheosis, but nope, we are not there yet.
No, each day from now on, we're going to be releasing 10 episodes.
God, don't manifest that.
No, I could not.
Only we could dig a hole that deep.
Yep.
All right, well, I'm gonna say, I think that's the main thing we had to cover. I'm going to cut you off before we accidentally do that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about all we had to cover. And in that case, you will hear from us again soon.